Hi, this is Sam.
And this is Inuel.
And this is Murderous Intention. Hey guys, welcome back for another episode. It was freezing these past 2 days, I'm just saying.
Yes, upstate New York was absolutely freezing. I heard like most of the Northeast type, and I don't know how far down it went, but yeah, we're not used to wind chills of minus 35. I had my heater on, and my heater's pretty good. On the small apartment, we were freezing, completely freezing, and it was on. We had even water boiling on the top, you know, because I guess nothing. We're like, we're just wasting gas at this point.
Damn.
Yeah.
Like, I know we normally keep our thermostat at 70.
Yeah.
But we had to kick it up. Well, he kicked it up to where it was like at 74. So now today that it's nice and, you know, it's a little warmer this morning. Yeah. I'm like, oh my God, it's hot. I'm hot.
Yeah.
You know? And then I look at the thermostat and the thermostat only says 74. And I'm like, are you serious? So I lowered it to 70 in hopes that I'd get a little cool down.
Right. But I mean, 25 degrees, I think that's what it is now. Feels like it's 55 degrees outside, you know, compared to what it was yesterday and the day before.
Yeah.
When it was like minus degree weather. They said, because it was weird, we usually turn on our water so the pipes don't freeze.
Yeah.
So we do it every night, you know, so there's no problem. We turn it off every morning. Yesterday, 10, 11 o'clock, something like that, maybe 12, I go to the bathroom to wash my face, whatever, and there's no cold water. And I'm like, so my wife told me, oh no, they're probably working on the downstairs neighbors, no problem. She gets in contact with him and like, no, nobody's been here. You know, they said they were going to come 2 hours ago, but they never came. So I'm like, so what the heck happened to my cold water? It got frozen in the morning. And I'm like, oh, damn it.
I think it was like, what, negative 15 yesterday morning.
Yeah, the super told me that it was negative 15 when he woke up. By the time he got out and everything, it got as close to minus 30, or close to minus 35. By like 8, 9, 10 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, that don't happen. When the sun comes out, usually, you know, the weather goes up a little bit.
No, the wind chill.
Not yesterday.
No, that wind chill was a disaster. But yeah, so from what I saw, we're supposed to get some good weather this week.
It's supposed to be like 40 degrees today or something?
45 or 42, something like that.
That's going to feel like summer compared to minus 35 that we had yesterday.
Yes, sir.
I lowered the heat. I'm like, no, we're not. We need to conserve some this heat now.
Yes, I know.
Okay.
I'm seriously thinking about solar panels because of the electricity bill, y'all. I'm like, maybe if I get solar panels, that would be good.
I don't know. I mean, they say that it's supposed to help on your electric bill and all that, so.
Yeah, but the only downfall from what I've heard from other people was it takes about a year or two for you to see the effect of it.
Yeah.
You know? So I'm like, you know, you question those. But anywho, so what are we talking about today? Like, what's going on?
Okay. So we are talking about the Boogeyman of Westfield. I'm going to subtitle it the Liz Family Murders.
Okay.
So, I have a question.
I have an answer, hopefully.
No, I phrased this question because I know you normally talk about it. So, do you believe that a perfect murder can be, can somebody successfully make a perfect murder and get away with it in today's times? And I'm talking about technological terms.
That's a good question. And honestly, I'll give my reason why I say this answer. I truly think yes. So here's the thing is, if you're gonna murder somebody, right? You always gonna do it where it's not somebody who's in any sort of way attached to you. And then you want to make sure that there's no like cameras, visual places. You want to have it where it's dark, so that way if somebody was to see you, they only know the silhouette. Which, if you're smart, you wear the appropriate attire, so that way your body figure and the perspective of your height and whatnot is not accurate to what you really are, you know. And then you want to go and detach yourself from the events. And you never want to do it in your home base. And it's one of those, and then you need to always have in the back of your mind that Vegas rule. And but the thing is, you can never talk about it. Like, it is hush tone. So if you have all those things of that knowledge of how to do things, yes, you can. I'm not psychotic, I promise. I'm not psychotic. But
Like I said, we've discussed it before, so I knew with this case that was a perfect question.
people are gonna think I'm psychotic and that I'm ready to murder somebody. Oh.
So I should not say that you have said before that you could get away with the perfect murder? I shouldn't say it. Anyway, I mean, is it possible? Yes. Is it, you've got to like.
But technically, I can't get away with it because I don't cannot lie for ships.
Well,
Okay,
true.
so
True.
yeah, and I have such a guilty conscience that I will go and probably end up bringing myself to the station after doing so. I'm like, listen, I didn't mean to. Well, I did mean to, but I didn't think it through, and I wasn't thinking, and I was going on adrenaline, and I was being stupefied, and I did it.
And then you have the death sergeant like, you did what? What are you talking about? You already confessed to something. I don't even know what the hell you confessed
They'll just lock my ass up and be like, what the fuck is wrong with this show?
So I think that yes, it's possible, but there's got to be a lot of like there's got to be so many things that you have to do to possibly get away with it. My thing is nowadays with all the technology, everybody has a camera phone.
True.
Most houses nowadays have some type of surveillance camera.
Those damn ring alarms.
Those ring alarms and all that. So, and so the chances of you being caught is greater now than it was 1950, 1960s, and maybe even 1970. But yeah, I mean, can it be possible? Of course. I asked my wife, do you believe a perfect murder can be made? Can somebody actually commit a perfect murder? Like, yeah, cannibalism. No evidence. And I'm like, wait, what? I'm like, wait, what? I'm like, I told her, but wait, Jeffrey Dahmer was a cannibalist and got caught. Yeah, because he was an idiot. That's what she told me. Yeah, because he was an idiot.
Well, he kept body parts. That's why he got caught.
Yeah, that's what she said. She said if he would have ate them all, no, there's no way he would have ever been caught. But he kept a couple of them for his souvenirs. I mean, wow, that was more cryptic than I expected her answer to be.
See, like, the most sadistic I ever got, like, in the thought process, right? Yeah. Especially when you're watching your, like, the documentaries and everything like that, and you're like, well, how could they have done it differently to prevent themselves from getting caught? And I'm like, a lot of them nowadays, they go into dismemberment, but they put it in trash bags and throw it in the, and I'm like, no, don't do that.
Yeah.
I agree with, I don't agree with the cannibalism, and I just think my, yeah, she's psychotic. don't tell her I said that. I would never eat somebody. I just, like, it takes a lot out of me just to eat meat, and I know I gotta eat meat for health reasons, but, yeah, I can
Regan
never eat. Yeah.
We mm-hmm. might disagree with you about the meat protein part. Possibly.
Yeah, but they don't also look at the statistics. They, how much more other of other foods you gotta consume to get the equivalent to one piece of meat that can give you.
Yeah.
You know? So I'm not gonna go and eat a bunch of other stuff to get my protein needs and get my iron needs and get this needs and get that needs and be like, ugh, now I feel like a fat pig and I ate too much.
Yeah, so we're actually not asking for you. You know, I know we don't get many comments on these videos. Excuse me, podcasts. I'm already thinking about the YouTube channel. Sorry. We don't get many comments on these podcasts as it is, but I don't want that to be the reason why people explode our comments because we disagree with vegans. You know what I'm saying?
Well, we haven't heard anything back from a lot of our the sexual stuff. Right. I think we're fine, especially when with the gender stuff and everything. We haven't got anything back on that. We're fine.
Yeah,
the vegans will stand down.
Okay, so my case this week is it's John List. He's the murderer.
Okay.
Well,
who is he?
Well. Let's discuss it.
Okay. Dum dum.
So, John List was born in Bay City, Michigan. List was the only child of German-American parents, John Frederick List and Alma Barbara Florence List. Like his father, List was a devout Lutheran and a Sunday school teacher. List graduated from Bay City Central High School in 1943. That same year, he enlisted in the United States Army and served as a laboratory technician during World War II. His father died in 1944. Mm-hmm. After List was discharged in 1946, he enrolled in the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor, where he earned a bachelor's degree in business administration and a master's degree in accounting, and was commissioned a second lieutenant through ROTC. So he did a lot in his early life, huh?
Yeah. Not a slacker.
Definitely not a slacker. In November 1950, as the Korean War escalated, List was recalled to active military service at Fort Eulist in Virginia. He met Helen Morris Taylor, the widow of an infantry officer killed in action in Korea, who lived nearby where her daughter Brenda, lived, I guess. John and Helen married on December 1, 1951 in Baltimore, Maryland. I don't think there is another Baltimore, but anyway, Baltimore, Maryland. The family moved to Northern California. The Army, realizing this, List's accounting skills, reassigned him to the Finance Corps. And my mouse is not working? Okay. So after his completion of his second tour in 1952, List worked for an accounting firm in Detroit. Mm-hmm. And then as an order supervisor at a paper company in Kalamazoo, where his three children were born by 1959. Liz had risen to general supervisor of the company's accounting department, but Helen, an alcoholic, had become increasingly unstable in 1960. Became increasingly unstable. In 1960, his stepdaughter Brenda married and left the household and left moved with the remainder of his family to Rochester, New York, to take a job with Xerox. There, he eventually became director of accounting services director of accounting services. In 1965, Les accepted a position as vice president and controller at a bank in Jersey City, New Jersey, and moved with his wife, children, and mother into Breeze Knoll, a 19-room Victoria mansion at 431 Hillside Avenue in Westfield. So that's, how's it, what's it called? That's his kind of early life and who he married. And so this lady, Brenda, had a stepdaughter that I guess was older, moved out eventually, and he had three kids with her.
Okay.
So. On November 9th, 1971, Liz murdered his entire immediate family.
Oh, wait, you can't just throw that like that on me.
Why not?
I always smooth sail into my murders.
No.
Yeah, I do. You just bam.
No. No smooth sailing. No smooth sailing, sorry. No.
All that came into my mind was like, it came in like a wrecking ball.
That was a delivery, exactly.
Oh my god. Yep. Wait, but how did he kill them?
Well, you told me to stop, so I can't finish until you ready now? Did the wrecking ball hit you, or did it miss?
No, it slightly missed. I was able to, you know.
Okay. So on November 9th, 1971, Les murdered his entire immediate family using his own 9mm Steyr 1912 semi-automatic handgun and his father's Colt 22 caliber revolver. While his children were at school, he shot his wife Helen, age 47 at the time, in the back of the head.
Wow.
And then his mother, and then his mother, Alma, 84, above the left arm. As his daughter Patricia, 16, and younger son Frederick, 13, arrived home from school, Liz shot each of them in the back of the head. After making himself lunch, Liz drove to the bank to close both his and his mother's bank accounts. And then to Westville High School to watch his eldest son, John Frederick, 15, playing a soccer game. So, I killed my wife, I killed my mother, let me make myself some lunch, go to the bank, and watch my son, 15, play soccer. No big deal.
I think I heard this before. Oh. I think I heard this story before.
After driving John Frederick home, they shot him repeatedly because, as misfire evidence showed, his son attempted to defend himself. Unfortunately, he was not successful.
Damn it. Can I get like one little happy moment? Like,
not in this story. You never give me happy endings. What are you talking about? More happy endings.
We in my last one, we captured the dad. And he's serving time, and the son is serving time, and the uncle's serving time. I gave a happy ending, a bam.
Yeah, okay. But I just started. Can you give me a minute?
Okay.
Thank you. So let's place the bodies of his wife and children on sleeping bags in the mansion's ballroom. He left his mother's body in her apartment in the attic. In a 5-page letter to his pastor, found on the desk in his study, Liz claimed that he saw too much evil in the world and he had killed his family to save their souls.
Bullshit.
Now you got.
Like, don't come out with a God complex. That's been used already.
So he then cleaned the various crime scenes, removed his own picture from all family photographs in the house, turned the radio to a religious station, and departed. Now, are you ready? This is where it gets interesting, kind
Okay.
of. The murders were not discovered until December 7th, nearly a month later, due in part to the family's reclusive tendencies, and in part to notes sent by Liz to the children's schools and part-time jobs claiming that the children will be visiting their ailing maternal grandmother in North Carolina for a few weeks.
Son of a biscuit. He gave himself some time.
Yeah. Now you kind of get the question, why I asked the question at the beginning.
Okay, so he was on a good trail. My thing is, wouldn't, but here's where I think he effed up, is that common sense is back in that era, that time, most females who had kids had a husband, you know? And then
There's no.
he cut his picture out of the frames, which you can obviously see. Okay, somebody's obviously missing.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, he said removed, so I don't know if he actually just took those pictures with him when he was in it.
Or burnt it.
Yeah. So,
Burnt it would be smarter.
because I mean, it's kind of simple, it's kind of easy to see a picture and say, hey, somebody's cut out, I wonder why. You know, and kind of check, even though it was 1971, it's kind of harder, it was harder to check back then where the picture came from and who was on it, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So, anyway, Helen's mother was in fact ill and had canceled a visit to Westfield because of it. So, he didn't technically lie. Had she made the trip, Liz later says she would have been his sixth victim. So thankfully, her mother didn't come because she would have been dead too. Okay, so. So,
Gosh.
Liz also stopped, got milk, mail, and newspaper delivery. Oh, no, sorry, excuse me, I said it wrong. Liz also stopped all milk, mail, and newspaper delivery. So, nobody was coming to the house to deliver anything.
So they wouldn't smell the bodies decaying. They would have thought they're on vacation or visiting the ill family. So with probably if mail was to pile up, everybody like, well, you know, they're visiting family, so that's why it brought him some time so he can get ahead of the popo and get away. Oh my dear Lord, this is cringing.
Neighbors noticed that all of the mansion's rooms were illuminated day and night, with no apparent activity within the house.
He left the lights
After
on?
he basically left all the lights on in the house.
Do that nowadays,
So,
I'll smack you.
That bill, right?
But like, yo, I don't care what you did. Don't leave my lights on, okay? That bill is high.
So after the light bulbs began burning out one by one, the neighbors called the police. Officers entered through an unlocked window leading to the basement and discovered the family's bodies. So Westfield, where a few violent crimes had been recorded since 1963, received national attention at the site of one of the most notorious felons in New Jersey since the kidnapping and murder of the Lindenberg baby. Because I kind of remember that, but I don't, not totally.
Damn.
So that was in the same city, and So a nationwide manhunt was launched. Police investigated hundreds of leads without success. All reliable photographs of Liz had been destroyed. The family car was found parked at JFK Airport in New York City, but police found no evidence that Liz had boarded a flight. Alma's body was flown to Frankenmuth, Michigan, and interred at the St. Lawrence Lutheran Cemetery. Helen and her three children were buried at Fairview Cemetery in Westfield. Breeze Knoll remained empty until it was destroyed by fire in August 1972, 9 months after the murder. Although the destruction was officially ruled arson, it remains officially unsolved with no suspects. Destroyed along with the home was a ballroom stained glass skylight, rumored to be signed by Tiffany, original worth at least $100,000 at that time, equivalent to $650,000 in 2021. So a new house, of course, was built in the site in 1974. Okay. So, John List killed all his family members. Except for the son at the time. He went to the bank, did whatever, some chores, went to see his kid. Killed him eventually after missing a couple of shots because the kid fought back. There was no evidence of him in his house as far as pictures and stuff like that. His car was found in New York City, JFK Airport, but there was no flight with his name on it. So he did not fly out of JFK, at least not
Did he
with.
take a train or a bus?
We're about to find out. So in 1971, as the FBI later discovered, this had traveled by train from New Jersey to Michigan and then to Colorado. He settled in Denver in early 1972 and took an accounting job under the name Robert Peter Bob Clark. So Robert Peter Clark, people called him Bob, which is kind of normal for Robert.
Okay.
One of his college classmates, so he took the identity of one of his college roommates, classmates.
Wow.
Although the real Bob Clark later asserted that he never knew List. So where he got the name, I'm guessing from college, what you call that? I forget the terminology, but you know where you can see your classmates and all that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know what you're talking about. Probably like, 'cause if I'm right, like they used to back then, like put the names on the paper of who, what your grades were.
Yeah, all in. Yeah, so it's easy. So it was easy to
See
like
somebody's
you kind of
grades.
saw. Yeah. So you could see like I don't know, Lauren Acevedo, 79. Yeah, and it went down alphabetically. Okay. So from 1979 to 1986, he
Okay.
was a control. Huh?
I said okay.
Yeah. He was a controller at a paper box manufacturing outside Denver. He joined the Lutheran congregation and ran a carpool for Southern church members. At one religious gathering, he met an army PX clerk named Dolores Miller and married her in 1985. In February 1990, excuse me, in February 1988, the couple moved to a house in the Brandon Mill neighborhood of Midlothian, Virginia, where Liz, still using the name Bob Clark, resumed work as an accountant at a small accounting firm. The firm was called Madrea, Joyner, Kirkham, and Woody. In 1972, Liz was proposed as a suspect in the DB Copper Air piracy case because of the timing of his disappearance, 2 weeks prior to the airline hijacking. So I'm guessing they're just naming him and shit now. Multiple matches to the hijacker's description and the reasoning that a fugitive accused of mass murder had nothing to lose. Liz was questioned by the FBI investigators after his capture, but he denied any involvement in the Cooper case. While his name is still occasionally mentioned in Cooper articles and documentaries, no direct evidence implicates him, and the FBI no longer consider him a suspect. So the FBI had him on a totally different case, but it wasn't him. But it wasn't him.
But wouldn't you want to go and like take fingerprints or be in the FBI?
I guess they were just questioning him, and they really didn't really have him as a real suspect. It was just like, hey, your name keeps coming up. Let's, see what he got to say about it.
God. Those are those moments where you want to say, "What the fudge?" Okay? Like you're given the gift. It's wrapped up. Put a pretty bow on it. And you still don't see it.
Yeah, then you return it to sender. Like, this ain't mine here. You gotta have it back.
He's like, "No."
So, in May 1989, the 18-year-old crime was recounted on the Fox television program America's Most Wanted during his first year on the air. The segment featured an aged progressive clay bust sculpted by forensic artist Frank Bender, which turned out to bear a close resemblance to Liz's actual appearance.
Oh, shit.
On June, yeah, it was pretty good. On June 1st, less than 2 weeks after the broadcast, Liz was arrested at a Richmond accounting firm after a Denver neighbor recognized the description and alerted the authorities.
Yeah.
So, and I did see something on Amazon Prime, but I had to pay for it, so I said no, thank you. What's the name of it? Something about a next door neighbor. I'll find it and I'll put it in the description.
Oh, okay.
So, but it looked like it was about this young lady that knew something was suspicious about her neighbor, and basically figured it out and alerted the police. So I'm guessing that's what they're saying. So Liz continued to stand by his aliases for several months, even after his 1889 extradition to Union County, New Jersey, finally. My mouse is really not working, guys. Sorry.
This is what happens when you use the new age technology.
Right. Okay, so he was extradited to Union City, New Jersey. After finally facing the irrefutable evidence, including a fingerprint match with Liz's military records, as well as evidence found at the crime scene, he confessed his true identity on February 16, 1990. Almost 19 years later. After 19 years after the...
I was 5 years old.
Right?
Damn.
I was maybe 13. No, not yet. I was 12.
Sheesh.
So, at trial, Liz testified that his financial difficulties reached crisis level in 1971, where he was laid off with the closure of the Jersey City Bank. To avoid sharing his humiliating development with his family, Liz engaged in the same routine and just as when employed, leaving home each morning on schedule and spending the day at job interviews or at the Westfield train station, reading newspapers until it was time to come home. Liz diverted money from his mother's bank account to avoid default on his mortgage. As the years progressed, the family's financial problems became more strained. Liz encouraged his children to seek part-time work. Ostensibly to teach them maturity and responsibility, but in actuality to help keep the family financially sound.
Wow.
So I don't know if that's actually what happened, or is that the bullshit he fed the police? But I kind of believe it because his wife was an alcoholic, so that didn't help the financial matters as it was.
No.
And then him losing his job on top of it, you know.
And then you said he had a mansion.
Yeah, he moved into this mansion in Westfield, New Jersey.
So I think, now get me if I'm wrong, but I think what he did was he took big ass leap, got into that house, thinking he was good with his job, and comes to find out shit blew up in his face.
Yeah. No, exactly. That's why most people tell you don't buy mansion's way different than a house, obviously. But don't buy something that you're not sure, you know, like if you're living paycheck to paycheck, I'm gonna say this way. Don't get a house. Because you're not going to afford it. You're not going to be able to, you know, like if you're doing good at work, you've been there for, you know, and you're saving some money, blah, blah, blah. Great. But he definitely lived above his means. You know.
Oh, my God.
He was dealing with his wife's alcoholism and her untreated syphilis. Contracted from her first husband and concealed for 18 years. I don't know what that is. Okay, so it's a disease that damages your internal organs and can result in death. Wow, okay. According to trial testimony, Helen had pressured Liz into marriage by falsely claiming that she was pregnant, then insisted that they marry in Maryland, which did not require the premarital syphilis test mandated in most other states at the time. Also, she's talking about the blood test that you normally have to take when you get married. Okay. Though her health progressively deteriorated, she said nothing to Liz or her physicians until 1969, when a thorough workup revealed the condition. By then, progression of the disease combined with her excessive alcohol consumption had, according to testimony, transformed her from an attractive young woman to an unkempt and paranoid recluse, who frequently and often publicly humiliated Liz, comparing his sexual prowess unfavorably with that of her first husband. Damn, so she embarrassed him on top of it. Jesus Christ.
But that still doesn't give him like an excuse of why he killed his kids at the end of the day.
No, none of this stuff.
No. Like, he could have done the deadbeat dad thing, you know, even though I'm against it, but he could just divorce her and just left them shambled in the debt, you know?
I mean,
there was no need to kill them.
Yeah. So, a court-appointed psychiatrist testified that Liz suffered from obsessive-compulsive personality disorder, and that he saw only two solutions to the situation: accept welfare, or kill his family and send their souls to heaven. Welfare was an unacceptable option, he reasoned, because it would expose him and his family to ridicule and violate his authoritarian father's teaching regarding the care and protection of his family members.
Listen, sometimes you gotta do what you gotta do. Like, anybody who knows me, I hate handouts. I hate, you know, anything like that. But there have been times where it was a struggle. And I'm like, okay, you know what? I need a helping hand. Never would I consider remotely or even a fragment to go and murder my loved ones to not have to accept the fact that I might just need temporarily assistance, you know?
I mean, it wasn't like he's like, hey, wife, let's go on public assistance, let's milk it for everything they got, and every time they say, oh, we got to go to work or whatever, have another kid. Let's just keep doing that and have like 15 kids or whatever, you know? It's as much as I understand that feeling, everyone needs help every once in a while.
Yeah.
As long as you're not, you know, I'm just going to keep doing this just because I don't want to go to work. I don't want, you know, make up all
the
excuses.
Basically milking the system.
Yeah. Just, you know, hey, this is great. I don't have to do nothing. I could just sit down and do nothing. And, you know, I get rent paid for and a number of other things. Yeah, that's my puppies. Acting an idiot. Okay, so on April 12, 1990, Liz was convicted of 5 counts of first-degree murder. At his sentencing hearing, he denied direct responsibility for his actions, saying, I feel that because of my mental state at the time, I was unaccountable for what happened. I ask all affected by this for their forgiveness, understanding, and prayer. The judge was unpersuaded.
Good.
So, John Elmo List is without remorse and without honor, he said. After 18 years, 5 months, and 22 days, it is now time for the voice of Helen, Alma, Patricia, Patrick, and John F. to rise from the grave. He imposed a sentence of 5 terms of life imprisonment to be served consecutively, the maximum permissible penalty at the time. Filed an appeal of his convictions on grounds that his judgment had been impaired by post-traumatic stress disorder due to his military service. Hold up. He's coming up with every fucking excuse in the book not to go to fucking jail. My mental state. Oh, wait. Post-traumatic stress disorder because I was in the military. What the fuck?
You don't get that just out of random. No.
So he also argued that the letter he left behind at the crime scene, essentially his confession, was a confidential communication to his pastor, and therefore inadmissible as evidence. A federal appeals court rejected both arguments. Listen, the only time, as a person that grew up in the church, the only time that a confession to a pastor is inadmissible in court is when you say it directly to the pastor. If you leave a
Exactly.
note, you're leaving evidence. They could use that. They could use the note to do whatever. You just can't say, "Well, I left it to my pastor, and that, I can't be charged for that. You can't use that as evidence." The heck we can. Yeah, of course we can.
Yeah, and especially if you didn't address it to your pastor, you just wrote the letter.
He could have adjusted to his pastor. He should not have left a note. He should have gone to his pastor and said, "Listen, I need to confess right now."
I have
And that way,
sinned.
yeah. And that way they, I mean, nowadays, I know, and I'm just, I'm, I don't know from experience, but I've seen a lot of cases where they try to make the pastor speak, blah, blah, blah. It never works. Because it's like, same thing with a lawyer speaking on a defendant that's guilty. No matter what the client said to the lawyer or to the doctor, to whatever, it's inadmissible because,
Client privilege.
client privilege, right? So, List eventually expressed a degree of remorse for his crime, saying, "I wish I had never done what I did," he told Connie Chung in 2002. "I regretted my actions and prayed for forgiveness ever since." When asked why he had not taken his own life, he said he believed that suicide would have prevented him from going to heaven, where he hoped to be reunited with his family. And you fucking think murder is, you're gonna reach heaven? Suicide? No, I will never reach heaven. But if I commit murder, not one, not two, not three, but really?
He got his wires crossed.
The fuck? Commit five murders, but if I commit suicide, I won't go to heaven. Five murders is okay.
I think what's worse is he killed his own kids. It's like, dude, no, you are condemned.
And it's like, there's no reason for it. Let's not forget, and I have a little bit more to say, something, a little, another little paragraph. But I think it's cowardly that you want to kill your family, but you shoot them all in the back of the head. You planned this out for months. Who knows, maybe years, who knows? But you're not gonna face them when you kill them. You're just gonna shoot them in the back of the head.
Because he knew if they was facing him, he couldn't do it.
Right. And I mean, they had a better chance to defend themselves, obviously, but like, you couldn't face your family to shoot them. But you planned all this. You took your, like, you knew to take your pictures down, to go to court, to go to the bank, excuse me, and take your money and your mother's money. Went to see your son in practice, at his game, excuse me. Anyway, to end my case, Liz died of complications from pneumonia at age 82 on March 21st, 2008, while in prison at St. Francis Medical Center in Trenton, New Jersey. In reporting his death, the New Jersey Star Ledger referred to him as the Boogeyman of Westfield. So he died at age 82. And he's a horrible criminal that kills his own family. Like, what the fuck?
So
What's your thoughts?
here's the thing is, I don't see why they called him the boogeyman because it wasn't really like,
Two.
it was, I don't know, when you think about the boogeyman, you think one, nighttime, two,
Right.
someone who just appears and out of random,
Right.
like that, like
True.
Like, if they would have called the Night Stalker, Ramirez, the boogeyman, I can see that. I can say,
Right.
yeah. Because that dude, you
Yeah.
nobody knew when he was going to attack.
Right.
I can
Right.
see that. If they call it Ted Bundy, a lot of these other guys who did a lot of their crime
Yeah.
at night, I can see where they would say, that's a boogeyman. This dude, he killed his own family. Family
They brought their
annihilator? Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything other than that, it's like, I don't really go with the boogeyman thing, but I guess that's what they called him at that point because wording wasn't like how it is nowadays.
Yeah, I mean, and we all know that every time the media names somebody something, it's always, why the heck you named them that? It don't make
First
no
of all,
sense.
why even give them a name,
Because it sells papers. A boogeyman of Westfield. Oh shit, I gotta find out what happened yet.
What
And
made him
that's where it
the
starts.
boogeyman?
Yeah, I gotta know. I gotta read it. And then they'll run it for a week or 2 weeks, as long as they can, so people could keep buying papers.
Until it dries out.
Yeah, until it's like, okay, we sold enough papers. We could be done with this case now. So, but yeah. So, what do you think? Any thoughts?
He was smart until a point. 'Cause he did get away with it for some time being. Now, my thing is, once he realized that the FBI pulled him, even though he was not the person that they were looking for, I would have went and said, you know what? I need a jet. I need to get out of here. My little butt would have went either he's in Colorado, cross the border over to Canada, or go downhill and go south of the border. Any which way that I can go to get out of whatever circumstance. Because, hello, pulled me once saying I'm the person you're looking for. You're gonna pull me again, and this time I am gonna be the person you're looking for. I would have jetted. No one was tying the fact that he was who they were looking for until, they did the America's Most Wanted, and it's like you had your opportunity to flee. You had your opportunity to get out of there. It looks like the past two cases we've done, this case and last case, both murderers were on America Most Wanted.
Yes.
That's crazy.
And I mean, the longer we do this, the more we're gonna bump into America's Most Wanted, because they almost did all of them, except for the newer ones that just happened. Because, yeah. So yeah,
It's just crazy.
it's crazy. It's crazy. I mean, I was looking for cases, and I'm like, oh, John Liss. Okay, he looks. That name sounds interesting. And then I'm like, oh crap. Okay, yeah, this is the one. So, I mean, no reason again. I mean, the whole bullshit of, I wanted to save their souls. It's complete bullshit. The thing is, oh, I had to go on welfare, which a lot of people have done. I'm not gonna say percentage because I'm always wrong on percentage, but a whole lot of people have been on some type of welfare. Or I'm gonna kill my family to get out of this. There's no comparison between the two.
No.
Like, hey, I'm gonna either have to go to welfare or sell my mansion and my car. Okay, that's more comparable. We could get a smaller house. We could pay off our debt and get a
Yeah.
smaller house. More
Which a
power.
lot of people
But
don't think to downsize, and there's not an
right.
issue.
No, all the time. All the time. All the time. So it's like, I understand now that he had obsessive disorder, whatever the right terminology for it is, like you went from one extreme to the entire other with nothing in the middle. Like there had to be more options in between welfare and killing your family. I mean, there has to be. So, but then again, we have people that mental health has been one of the biggest reasons why they do the stuff they do, and they never get help for it. And it's, I don't know where I read it, but men have a higher percentage of not only mental health, but unhelped mental health. So they never go, the macho man, stigma, all this other bullshit that really is like nowadays it's total bullshit. You can go to mental health and you can, you need to, if you need it, you need it. Just like you go see a doctor because your back is ailing or you're sick and you have a cold. If you have mental issues, you need mental health help, you should go do that as well. So, but yeah, there's always mental health is always involved in it somehow, some way. I feel sorry for the family, especially the 82. Like, I can't say especially, but like the 82-year-old mother, she was gonna die anyway. She was closer to death than any of the other ones that were killed. Why the mother? And I'm gonna say because she had money in that bank that he could get away with.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
His main thing was financial.
Yeah.
It was all about
Because he
the
can.
greens. It had nothing to do with family and whatnot. It was all
Yeah.
about how people saw him, how he saw himself, and wanting to stay at that high rank.
Yeah. Yeah, because I mean, we definitely know that from him saying that about, hey, listen, why didn't you kill yourself? You ain't got rid of all of that. Oh no, because I won't make it into heaven where I hopefully get to see my family again. You think your family want to see you in heaven after that?
Nope.
Like especially. Like above all of them is the children. Like they were super young. 15, 16, and I forget what the youngest one is. But they had a whole full life that they could have lived.
Yep, and he snuffed it
You
out.
know? And he, just took that away from them. So, and their mother was sickly and who knows, that disease, as I said, leads to death, so she was eventually going to die as well. So that, like, of course, the mother's not going to allow him to kill, the children. But it's crazy. It's a crazy case.
It is. So, if you want more cases like this or the previous one, feel free to email us at
Murderousintentions21@gmail.com.
or you can always message us or leave us a comment on our Instagram at
Murderous_intentions_podcast, or you can always tweet us at
MMI True Cry Podcast. And remember, you can listen to us on Spotify and your Amazon Music or Audibles.
Audio, yes.
Have fun.
Be in the
Enjoy.
creek.